Hello and welcome to the Pax Mundi show. I'm your host, Nigel, and I'm going to be trying to shed some light on the new Dark Age, the War of Terror, to try and deconstruct some of the myths and disinformation about that global war of terror. First, the war, peace and resistance news this week from Bahrain. UN torture investigators have stated that the Bahrain government is blocking their entry. The US-backed monarchy, which hosts the US Navy's Fifth Fleet, has cancelled the visit by UN reporter on torture, Juan Mendez. His visit has been cancelled indefinitely by the Bahraini government. Clearly, they've got something to hide. Over in the US federal judge has ordered the Pentagon to disclose who actually teaches at the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. This institution, military school, was formerly known as the School of the Americas and was notorious as the institution where they instructed Latin American military in the techniques of torture and interrogation and counterinsurgency. Over in Syria, U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has rejected Israeli claims that the Syrian government forces are using chemical weapons against rebel opposition. The Syrian opposition are also claiming that the government forces have killed over 500 civilians near to Damascus. Next door in Iraq, 26 people have been killed in clashes between Sunni demonstrators and Shiite government armed forces. This is in the run-up to the first elections to be held in Iraq since the U.S. Military occupation ended. So clearly there is a lot of tension going on in Iraq. In Libya, two people have been killed in a bombing at the French embassy in Tripoli. No one claimed responsibility. In Yemen, US drone strikes in Yemen this week killed seven people in two separate strikes. The first strike killed two people, and five people were killed last week in a strike in the village of Wesab. Yemeni activist Farhad al-Muslimi has written on his blog, "We used to think that drone strikes were a localized problem, with villages far from the Yemeni capital being targeted. This is no longer the case. It seems like no part of Yemen is safe from drones." Over in Afghanistan, the Afghan government has accused the CIA of killing 17 civilians. A CIA covert paramilitary unit, a death squad, allegedly killed 17 civilians. Afghan President Hamid Karzai said it was a CIA operation using a security structure that was in full service of the CIA and run by the CIA. Now, that is definitely strong language coming from the Afghan president, Hamid Karzai. So, just a bit of news this week on the issue of drones. You may recall that I was talking about the UK base where drones are being supported and flown from at RAF Waddington in Norfolk near Lincoln this Saturday. That will be on Saturday the 27th. There will be a national demonstration at RAF Waddington. That will be at 2 p.m. So the organisations running the demonstration are the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, CND, and the Stop the War campaign. So anybody who's interested in going to the demo, there is transport being run from most major UK cities. I'm actually going on a coach from Manchester that's being organised by CND and the Stop the War campaign. We will assemble at Lincoln, in Lincoln City Centre, at 12 noon, and we'll then march to RAF Waddington, aiming to get there for 2 p.m. and then you know, let them know what we feel about them flying these killing machines, these drones, you know, from the UK. You know, we need to send a very clear message to the US and to the UK government that, you know, the British people don't approve of, you know, this murder and, you know, mayhem and death from the sky. So I'm hoping to be doing some interviewing there and to feature this in the show next week, and with a bit of luck I might actually do a bit of live reporting if I can you know, bring that up. So moving on to the main items tonight, I'm going to review some current media. So these are newly released films and books. Some of them I may have mentioned before, or some of them have been out for a while, but nobody's taken any notice of them. So I'm going to review these items for you. The first up is Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield. This is both a book and a film. This week sees the official release of Dirty Wars, the book, by Jeremy Scahill. I've ordered my copy, and you know, I'll be talking about that you know, in another show maybe, when I've actually read all of the book. Dirty Wars the film, by Jeremy Scahill and producer Rick Rowley, produced by Big Noise Films, which won a prize at the Sundance Film Festival this year for the Best Cinematography Award. The film is due to go on general release in the US and in Canada in May or June. No mention of a UK release. I think this is probably something that we need to try and prompt them to do, you know, to see if we can get this film shown at independent cinemas, like the Corner House in Manchester, for example. So not sure when it will get to the UK, but it is actually available to stream. There are some clips, trailers that you can stream from dirtywars.org, www.dirtywars.org. In the process of making the film, Jeremy Scahill traveled to all corners of the world, from the tribal areas of Yemen to Somalia, Afghanistan and Iraq. Scahill traces the development and expansion of covert operations following 9/11. He details US-sponsored death squads in Iraq, violent and unrecorded nighttime special operations in Afghanistan. These nighttime raids have been banned again by the Afghanistan government. Hamid Karzai, the president, has ordered the US to stop these nighttime raids, but they persist and deny that they're doing them. They often target the wrong people. They then remove all evidence, including digging bullets out of their victims' bodies, and then blaming the deaths on the Taliban. Scahill also lifts a lid on the continuation of secret rendition, the rendition of kidnapped terror suspects to a CIA-run jail in Somalia, despite denials by the Obama regime that rendition has ended. Scahill further documents the hunting down and assassination of victims across the world, including US citizens killed by drone attacks, such as the US Muslim cleric Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen, and then following that, 2 weeks later, they murdered his son, Abdurrahman al-Awlaki. He was only 16 years old. He was a young kid of 16 years old, and he was a US citizen, and he was taken out by a drone strike that also killed several of his cousins. They were all young people eating in a restaurant, and it blew the building apart, blew them to pieces. His remains were only able to be identified because a piece of his head still contained what remained of his Afro hairstyle. So Scahill has been to a lot of these places where these events happened, and meticulously documented the evidence. He's goes into details about the development of the institutions of the dirty war, particularly the rise of JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, which has been enhanced by President Obama to become an unaccountable killing corporation with executive powers and operatives across the globe. We're now going to listen to a short audio excerpt from the film that will just give you a taste of the content of Dirty Wars. The world is a battlefield.
I got a strange phone call. Someone from the inside was reaching out to me. Someone close to the heart of the president's elite force.
There are hundreds of covert operations on multiple continents with the full support of the White House.
It's hard to say when this story began.
Greetings from Kabul, Afghanistan.
This was supposed to be the front line in the war on terror.
What's the name of this village out here?
But I knew I was missing the story. There was another war, hidden in the shadows. A night raid.
So there's the two men in the guest house were the first people killed.
You saw the U.S. forces take the bullets out of the body?
On your face.
Who were these men that stormed into Dawood's home? And why would they go to such horrifying lengths to cover up their actions?
Strikes, targeted killings. It was a questionable legality.
How had a covert unit taken over the largest war on the planet?
Joining us now is Jeremy Scahill.
Jeremy Scahill.
They're dismissing what you've done.
Why are you still alive? Are you paranoid? Not like everything Marwith. Oh, he's dead. What happened? He had an accident.
The list of raids read like a map of a hidden war.
The right guys would get targeted, plenty of other times the wrong people would get killed.
Algeria, Indonesia, Thailand, Jordan.
what we have essentially done is created one hell of a hammer. And for the rest of our generation, this force will be continually searching for an end.
Despite whatever conspiratorial theories, there's nothing to it.
If they are dangerous, if they are too strong, definitely has a missile in his future.
It's important to know when the president can kill an American citizen and when they can.
America knows war. They are war masters.
So that was a short excerpt of audio clips from the film Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield by Jeremy Scahill. Now, some of you may be interested in calling in to chat about some of these issues. If you would like to call in, you can call in on 0161-298-0298. That's a +44 0161 298 0298 if you're outside the UK, and you can also Skype at Bob's Backyard. Thank you. So, continuing with the Dirty Wars, Jeremy Scahill documents the development of the institutions of terror. Initially, a lot of the covert operations were carried out by the CIA, but another institution, the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, you will hear it called JSOC, has taken over a lot of the more public covert operations. And JSOC has gone on to become an institution with forces around the world, and it is JSOC that directs many covert operations that we are unaware of. We've actually only become aware recently through Jeremy Scahill's film Dirty Wars that JSOC has even been carrying on a secret war in Uzbekistan. So this is a completely clandestine war that nobody was aware of, and it's ongoing in Uzbekistan. Now, what is, you know, the US doing, getting involved and infiltrating these countries? So Scahill also makes a link between the development of the Dirty Wars and the US strategic foreign policy, which is linked to the aims of global hegemony and to the needs of the corporate sector for natural resources and new markets for their arms. So we have the now we have the Pax Americana. You are either with the US or you're against the US. And if you're against the US, then you become a terrorist or a supporter of terrorism. Or if you criticize the war on terror, then you are deemed to be providing material support for terrorism. Now, definitely Dirty Wars is the film to watch. You know, Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield, for those who want to know what is happening in this global war of terror, what is happening that we're not being told. The next film that I'd like to talk about is a different type of film completely. It's actually a thriller, technically, a fictional thriller. And on the theme of covert and special operations, it has been noticeable that since 9/11, there's been a growth in the genre of thrillers which are based on special operations. And particularly, there's a recurrent theme of a rogue special ops serviceman going against the corrupt or a compromised chain of command to carry out their own unofficial missions. This is a recurrent theme. There's many examples, that I can think of films like this. So all of these films have one thing in common. They tend to glorify violence and to normalize these covert operations and the collateral damage, civilian deaths, etc. I recently, however, watched a film called Haridon, which started along these lines, but then there was a dramatic twist in the tale, which took the film in a completely different direction. And it almost became what you might call a docudrama. So the film Haridon was actually released in November 2012, and it's a very low budget movie made in a single location with only three characters. The film was conceived and directed by writer Paul Finelli, and it was made at the Terra Mater Studios in Austria. These studios usually produce nature documentaries. The three actors involved in the film were Peter Fonda, Michael DeSante, and Travis Fimmel. Now, I'm not going to give away too much of the story because I would recommend you to watch this film, and I don't want to spoil it for you. But here is the basic premise. Travis Fimmel, who plays Lazarus Fell, is a former special ops serviceman, a Navy intelligence operative. And he's been tracking the world's most wanted terrorist for over 11 years. When he actually had this guy, the world's most wanted terrorist, within his sights, his crosshairs, and then he was compromised by his chain of command, who told him to abort his mission, allowing his target to escape. So Lazarus, whose father has his own axe to grind. His father was a naval intelligence chief who was killed when the Twin Towers were bombed on 9/11. So, this is the big thing in his life. So, his dad was killed in the Twin Towers. He was a naval intelligence chief, and he's got an axe to grind and another reason to go after this guy, the mastermind of 9/11, allegedly. So Lazarus then decides, that he's he you know, he's going to take things into his own hands, and he actually fakes his own death in a mission and goes AWOL. Technically, he is now dead, you know, missing in service, and he goes off on his own manhunt. And this takes him to Austria in Vienna, where he sets up a secret base in the Vienna Underground Railway complex underneath the streets of Vienna. And there he tracks his prey, this guy, the world's most wanted terrorist, who's had, you know, plastic surgery and is now living incognito in Vienna. So Lazarus captures his target and then starts to interrogate him. But what is his captive has to say is not what Lazarus wants to hear. And indeed, it challenges all his assumptions and even his confidence in his own mission. So this is definitely, it's a very interesting and provocative film. I would recommend you to watch it. The film appears not to have been widely released in the US at all, and has never been released in the UK. In fact, the only reviews that I could find of the film were all in German. So it does appear to have been circulated in Europe. But it is definitely one to watch. The film is available to download by BitTorrent. And the interestingly, the title, Harodim, is taken from the name for a middle-tier member of the Masonic orders. That is a yes man, a functionary, somebody who does what they're told. So it is interesting, actually, that this film, you know, it has a controversial subject, and that it is not getting any release whatsoever in the US. So there are, you know, films like this which, you know, just never get shown at all, because perhaps, you know, they're not what the establishment, you know, the media establishment want to see. I'll just mention another film that, you know, is interesting because it has similarities. That was Five Fingers. The film is called Five Fingers, and I think it was made in something like 2006-07. And it has a very similar style. It was, again, a low-budget movie with a small cast, made in a single location, most of it made in a single location, and then with a twist in the tail. So, again, it's not available on the movies, but it is available on Torrent, so check that one out. That's called Five Fingers. Okay, the next recent film that's been released that I'd like to talk about tonight is a documentary. And that is the No Fire Zone in the Killing Fields of Sri Lanka. This is an investigatory documentary. Was released just this week, and it is a documentary about the final weeks of the Tamil insurgency in the north of Sri Lanka in 2009. Now, the insurgency of the liberation of tigers of Tamil Eelam. These are more well known as the Tamil tigers. It was an autonomous area that was established by military insurgency and uprising in the Tamil areas in the north of Sri Lanka. Now, Sri Lanka has a majority Sinhalese population. Now, the Sinhalese are actually, you know, they were newcomers, as I understand, to the generally to the island of Sri Lanka, which used to be called Ceylon. And they are the majority, predominantly in the south and center of the island of Sri Lanka. And the government is Sinhalese dominated. Indeed, since Sri Lanka was given its independence, it was a former British colony known as Ceylon then, while it was part of the British Empire. But once island was given its independence, the Tamils became a very marginalized minority within the country. They were denied all sorts of rights, political rights, by actually outlawing their political parties, jailing their leaders. Their language was proscribed, and generally they were oppressed and, you know, denied their rights. Now, they tried lots of ways to try to assert their rights and to you know, actually get some representation and acceptance by the Sinhalese majority, but these appear to have failed. And by the 1970s, they had resorted to armed insurrection, to an armed insurgency, in order to gain their autonomy. This was their program of complete autonomy from the rest of Sri Lanka and the Sinhalese dominated government. So there has been this insurgency, which has been ongoing for over 30 years. The conflict has been the subject of UN concern, and it's been subject to a number of peace processes and truces during the 1980s and 1990s. For a period in the 1980s, the Indian government got involved in this conflict, and when the Sri Lankan forces were actually trying to starve the people of the Tamil North into submission by imposing a food boycott, the Indian government got involved, and they airlifted and dropped food to the Tamil people there. They later got involved in a peacekeeping force to try to maintain the truce between the Tamils and the majority. All of these efforts did eventually fail, and there has been a standoff for about 15 years or so, you know, with a low-level war going on between the forces of the Sri Lankan government forces and the Tamil Tigers. Now, the situation changed over the last 10 years, following 9/11, really, following, you know, after 2001, fueled by a resurgence of Sinhalese nationalistic fervour and the marginalisation of the Tamil Tigers by Sri Lankan government propaganda after 9/11. The Sri Lankan government tried to project the Tamil Tigers as terrorists in order to get closet support from the powerful nations to support a renewed war of assault on the Tamil stronghold in the north on the Jaffna Peninsula. Now, this assault started in 2008. So this is what the subject of this documentary is about. It is about this assault on this Tamil stronghold in the Jaffna Peninsula, particularly on the capital of Trincomalee, and particularly looking at what was happening in an area called the no-fire zone. Now, the no-fire zone was an area that had been designated during one of the truces, the agreements, as a demilitarized area to be recognized by both the Sri Lankan government and Tamil Eelam, the Tamil Tigers, so that this was somewhere that it had been agreed that civilians could go and they would be safe, so they would not be caught up in the conflict. Now, the Sri Lankan government forces were also armed by the British state, which is, as I stated, it's a former colonial power in what used to be British Ceylon. Britain has exported large amounts of arms to Sri Lanka, and indeed we are continuing to do that. We certainly were continuing to do that until this year, as far as I'm aware. I know that, you know, the campaign against the arms trade, you know, has actually been trying to lobby heavily the current Conservative and Liberal Democrat coalition government to get them to stop exporting arms to the Sri Lankan government, citing, you know, the human rights abuses that had taken place in Sri Lanka. So these arms that were exported from Britain have been used against the civilian population, principally the Tamil population. So this was a war that was intended to be carried out in secret, and government, the Sri Lankan government, excluded all journalists from the combat zone completely. And now in Sri Lanka, even Sinhalese Sri Lankan journalists who criticise their own government are subject to arbitrary interrogation, disappearances and torture. And what they definitely did was to stop any foreign journalists from even entering the country at that time and from going into or near to the combat zone. So the film starts in September 2008 with the rearmed Sri Lankan forces starting the offensive and the Tamil Tigers gradually retreating, gradually ceding territory and retreating back towards the capital and towards the no-fire zone. Now, the filmmakers were Callum McRae and Zoe Saleh. They chose to follow a number of individual cases of people who probably the public would empathise and sympathise with. For example, what one person was Vanya. Now, Vanya was a young British Tamil who had gone to visit family in Sri Lanka, in Trincomalee. He was staying with his relatives when the war started, and then he was trapped there, you know, and he was subject to, you know, the same treatment as other Tamils. Now, the treatment was horrific. The film documents the human rights abuses of the Sri Lankan forces, the killing of civilians, the killing of the surrendered unarmed Tamil Tigers. They'd surrendered, then they were tied up, and then they were shot. There's there was many examples of this. The Tamil civilian population, following the capitulation of the Tamil Tigers, were then herded into makeshift concentration camps where they were kept. This was in 2009, and they were kept there for over 12 months. And during this period, they were subject to abuse, deprivation, in very basic conditions, where many died of disease and hardship. They were also being interrogated by, you know, political intelligence, police and military intelligence. And what they would do is interrogate them, looking for links, trying to find out if they had been Tamil Elam sympathizers. Those who were promptly disappeared. Now, I will just mention that there was widespread sexual abuse of the female population. You have to picture a case. Most of these camps, the men were all killed, because as in many of these wars, all males were considered to be combatants, just like the US and the UK consider, you know, young males to be enemy combatants. So these Tamil women would be subject to sexual abuse and general abuses. Many of the women have now been forced into prostitution by the same people who captured and abused them. This is something that is still going on now, several years later. The Tamil people were relocated on this massive scale. Much of their land was confiscated by the military for ostensibly for defensive purposes, but the land which has been taken by the military has now often been sold on to Sinhalese settlers. So what took place was an ethnic cleansing where Tamils were displaced, put into camps, their land taken, Sinhalese settlers brought in. Now, the latest is that the UN General Assembly has watched the film, and following this event, the outrage of the Sri Lankan government abuses, the UN Human Rights Council has passed a motion, and that was 25 for, 13 against, and 8 abstaining. I don't know what the position of the British government was on this. Now, this motion called on the Sri Lankan government to carry out an investigation into allegations of international human rights violations. So this is all that the UN has done. They've asked the Sri Lankan government to investigate their own human rights abuses that were done during this period. Now, what one notorious case that has caught the public attention was, that's documented in the film, is the case of Balachandran Prabhakar. Now, Balachandran Prabhakar was the son of the Tamil Tiger leader Prabhakar, who was had already been he was murdered by the Sri Lankan forces. Now, the Sri Lankan army claimed that he'd been killed in crossfire, but the documentary showed pictures of him sat on a bench, alive, eating a snack, whilst he was in military captivity, or under the supposedly under the protection of the Sri Lankan government. The next photograph showed him lying on the floor with four bullet holes in his head. And then the next photograph showed him being burnt on a funeral pyre of bodies. So this is a very hard-hitting film. I actually don't know the details of when it's going to be released. It's the type of film that should be shown generally. People don't have any awareness at all about this conflict in Sri Lanka, and even less awareness about the ethnic cleansing. I'll call it genocide. I know that's, you know, that's a very controversial word, you know, that, but what I will say, what is taking place is a form of genocide. The Tamil population have been decimated, and they are continuing to be oppressed and to be Sinhalized, you know, to be marginalized and to have their culture, language, and their history diminished. I was actually shocked to see an article in the Independent newspaper here in Britain. Now, the Independent is a broadsheet newspaper in Britain, which it tends to portray itself as a liberal newspaper. But this article was actually trying to sell the idea that the Tamils, these are the ones who are left alive in their homeland, are actually benefiting from war tourism. Now, what has happened is that the Sinhalese majority from the south are actually being organised to come up and visit the war-torn Tamil area, to visit the site of the battles, the sites of battles, and the, for example, in the capital Trincomalee, there was a dugout. This was a large complex dugout, four stories down below the ground, built by the Tamil Tigers, which was their last redoubt where they held out. Now, this had, you know, all sorts of facilities in this compound. It has now been taken over and is being run by the Sri Lankan army as a business, whereby they take tourists, Sinhalese tourists from the south of Sri Lanka, and conduct tours of this compound, and this really to, I suppose, publicise, you know, their victory over the Tamils. And the Independent was selling the line that somehow the Tamils were in some way benefiting from this war tourism as a defeated people in their own land, a tourism that was, you know, based on their oppression by the Sinhalese majority government. Now, it is interesting that this issue of the whole issue of the war there in Sri Lanka, which was 2008 to 2009, was completely ignored by the world press generally, and by the powers generally, those countries with influence. However, suddenly, just this month, the US State Department has issued a report, Sri Lanka 2012 Human Rights Report. And the generally, the ethos is of this is that there were human rights abuses, there were disappearances, there was murder of civilians. And sorry, I'm going to have to wind up now. Thanks for listening. Look forward to the show next week, when you will have reports from the demonstration on Saturday at RAF Waddington, Britain's drone base.